Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
You know what? As long as she fights 135 pounds, I don't care if she's injecting a horse demon into her eyeballs.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
But I want to start getting paid. I want to start making heavyweight money.
Pedro Fernandez.
You know, just excited to be back. I wish we could do a fight every night. You know me, Pedro.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco, California. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Often imitated but never duplicated, 35, make that 37 plus years now of knocking out all bums. Welcome to the show. My name is Pedro Fernandez. We're going to have a couple of guests in this hour. Of course, we'll start things off in our next segment with my cousin Vinny, boxing promoter Vince Caruso. Wait, I'm not done. We'll come back in the third segment of the show, of course, with Jennifer Childers. Who is she? She was undefeated professional boxer, 7-0. She boxed for a couple years in the 90s. She's a model. Bottom line is she's a promoter, a matchmaker, a supermom, all kinds of stuff. She's got a great resume. We'll talk in depth with Jennifer Childers at about 40 minutes past the hour. So we've got open phone lines all around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, there's also the guilt-free, no-commitment text line. The number, 415-275-1613. The text line, once again, 415-275-1613. We're coming to you live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 211, and like 1,000 other internet platforms, including Twitch.tv, of course, it's a channel. And, of course, we've got Boxing Rocking just a week away. The Zone's got it going on November the 27th. Daniel Jacobs, of course, and Gabriel Rosado. Danny Jacobs, former middleweight contender, now super fighting at super middle. And also Demetrius Andrade, the former WBO middleweight champion, doing his thing against Dusty Harrison. They'll fight at 160 pounds as well. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
The sounds of Philadelphia, McFadden and White House. Wow, long time back. Way, way back. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look at the world of boxing and MMA. Want to mention the fact that David Tua, former heavyweight contender, celebrated his birthday yesterday. I televised the David Tua Ike Abeabuchi fight, which I thought was the best heavyweight fight I've ever seen in my life as far as televising is concerned, without a doubt. But as far as, like, personally been there, no doubt about that, Tua and Iabuchi went back and forth for 12 rounds, an incredible fight. Iabuchi won. Of course, Iabuchi would go on to be, like, the studded heavyweight until he, of course, got popped for raping a hooker in Las Vegas and went to jail and, of course, became a nut and that kind of crazy stuff. I remember interviewing him after the Tua fight in Sacramento, California, and he started going into this God thing, and like God was with him and all kinds of good stuff. And, like, and he went in a different world. I couldn't believe it. And then when I heard the interview, of course, after he got arrested in Las Vegas, when he was saying that God told him to rape that hooker, I understand what he was talking about God then. So the bottom line is, Ike Abeabuchi, a head case, never became heavyweight champion, never fought for the title. But Tua did, and Tua lost a 12-round decision, of course, to Lennox Lewis. And I went to the dressing room carrying the IBO belt to the dressing room for Amanda Stewart that night and watching Lennox Lewis unwind after that fight and him saying over and over again about David Tua, he ain't spit, he ain't spit, he ain't spit. Kept saying that's what Lennox kept saying in the dressing room after the fight. Took Lennox about 20 minutes to calm down, but the bottom line is Lennox was dominant that night, no doubt about that. Speaking of dominant, anytime I have my next guest on the show, he always finishes what's in a dominant performance. I call him my cousin Vinny. I'm talking about Vince Caruso, boxing promoter extraordinaire. How are you today, sir?
Hey, good morning, Pedro. It's just a good afternoon over there. I'm enjoying my Sunday. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Now, wait. Somebody told me that before we get into boxing, somebody told me you did something with that Eazy-E guy, that rap guy. Were you with him?
Yeah, man. Yeah, he's the one who actually brought me out to California. Way back in 93, I worked for Eric until he passed away up until 95.
Okay, passed away from HIV. Is what he didn't go and try to get any of that treatment, or he didn't know, or what was he in denial? Is that it? Most people don't die of AIDS anymore. I mean, not right away.
Well, you know, I was around Tommy Morrison. You remember that for as long as he went through his plight from the minute he said he was HIV positive till up until he died. Now, of course, people around him say he didn't die of AIDS, but I mean, the choreography fits, the timeline fits, you know, for us, how AIDS morphs from HIV into full-blown AIDS and then how it takes your life. No way Eric had that. There's just no way. I mean, a month before he went in the hospital, we were running around, and I mean, no one he's ever been with, any girls that I know he's ever been with, and I know quite a few, none of them have ever tested positive. I'll leave it at that. It didn't match up. It just, A didn't fit B on that one.
Okay, Tommy Morrison, of course, he got HIV, and they're going to spank me. Tony Holden probably never give me another job in my entire life. I was part of the Let's Get It On boxing series back in the day, but he'll probably never give me another job because I'm saying that, in my opinion, Tommy went out via HIV and AIDS. But Tommy Morrison, in 1995, he fights Razor Ruddock. I think we're in Kansas City, Missouri. Peyton Scherer was there. That was a great night. Well, I miss Peyton. Anyway, Peyton was a promoter. When I think about that night, after the fight was over with, they were stitching up Tommy's eye in this hotel dressing room. We all stayed in a certain hotel, and they were stitching up his eye on the bed in a suite. We, like, had a little party afterwards, and they were stitching up his eye. And right then and there, the bottom line was, he knew he was positive. I mean, he allegedly had known for a long time, and he was putting guys at risk.
Yeah. Listen, man, I'm going to be honest with you. You know, I used to dabble in the wrestling world for a long time. You know that,
yeah.
The pro wrestling world. And that's a really good reason why I wouldn't hook up with Missy Hyatt. It's because she was with him. So I was like, nah, I'm good.
You know, speaking of wrestling, I loved wrestling when kayfabe was for real. In other words, you suspended your belief when you watched wrestling. In other words, the good guys, the bad guys, the road warriors, go back in the days, of course, Bruno Sammartino on the East Coast and people like that. On the West Coast, there was Ray Stevens, of course, down there in Southern California, there was Freddie Blassie, people like that. But you know, when Vince McMahon sort of came out and said, you know, this is fixed, or willing to admit it's fixed, and it's choreographed, and it's sports entertainment, that sort of killed wrestling in my mind. It just did. Did it kill wrestling for you?
It was sort of like when you're a kid and you find out Santa Claus isn't real, like that kind of thinking. But, I mean, I love that business so much. And, I mean, if there was ever something that I was made to be involved in, it would have been that. But, yeah, I got into wrestling like in 83, and believe it or not, I got into through Billy Apter's, all those magazines, you know. I didn't do it from just watching Saturday morning wrestling. My favorite wrestler at the time was Harley Race.
Yeah.
This guy actually got me into the sport back in 83. And like you said, all the different territories, it was so different back then.
Man.
Now it's like wrestling, it's like boxing. It's like, that's why I can't stand boxing today, Pedro, because boxing, it's just, it's almost like it's been taken over, like in a Walmart kind of way. Where back then, back in the day, you had all these individual promoters in these different territories. I mean, Memphis was really hot back then in wrestling, Georgia, Florida. I mean, you had Gordon Solie down there in Florida and Georgia. I mean, it was great times. Now it's like the product that you're seeing on TV today, I'd rather watch the Westminster Dog Show. Man.
You know, speaking of Harley Race was bad enough and tough enough, and they had to do this with a lot of these NWA champions. I don't think Ric Flair was that tough, but it might have been. Anyway, the bottom line is Harley could beat any guy in a street fight. So they knew if you tried to pull some crap on Harley. In other words, what happened was the NWA world champion would travel around the world and go into different towns and different cities and face the good guy or the bad guy, depending on who the top draw was, and usually beat that guy, okay? But the bottom line is, some of those guys would try to pull a fast one on the champ, but you couldn't pull one on Harley because Harley would bust you up.
Yeah, man. Harley Race, dude. I remember that's when I got into wrestling was 1983, like right after my 13th birthday. And Harley Race had just beat Ric Flair and became, I believe it was the sixth or seventh time he became NWA champ. Now, mind you, where I'm growing up, Pedro, in New Jersey, it was just Bob Backlund and the WWF Saturday morning.
He sucked.
And that just wasn't good enough.
He sucked. You know what? Bob Backlund was the biggest mistake Vince McMahon Sr. ever made in his entire promotional career. I mean, I'm telling you, that guy was, I couldn't believe it. They took the title off Billy Superstar Graham, who was a given athlete and a given draw, and put it on this babyface who just didn't do nothing for me.
Nothing. And you know, he had a way to get back in. You know, a lot of people, especially if you're around the wrestling world, you know that Jesse Ventura was a takeoff of superstar Billy Graham.
Mm-hmm.
And when Jesse started getting really hot in WWF, you know, he had a really great chance to transition, you know, let Backlund drop the title to Ventura and then bring Hulk in when Hulk was done with Vern Gagne's nonsense. And it would have been a perfect transition, man. It would have just been great. You would have had Jesse against Hulk for the title in what, 84? But instead, you had that whole debacle with Backlund and the Sheik. And I think the Sheik was the one who came out on the short end of the stick of everything, because I think the Sheik could have had a nice little run there.
Well, the Sheik was a legit – listen – that dude the Iron Sheik was a legitimate bad dude. I think he represented Iran in the Olympics and this kind of stuff. And he was a bodyguard for the president over there. I mean, he was a legitimate bad dude. He should have broke Hulk Hogan's leg when they wrestled. I remember he was talking about doing that. Do you remember that? Do you remember that he was on behind the scenes? They were trying to get him to break Hulk Hogan's leg.
Pedro, listen to me. I'm going to tell you a really quick Sheik story.
Okay.
And Tom Triver will tell you about this, the boxing ring.
The Iron Sheik.
I used him. Yeah, Iron Sheik. Dude, we did a show in Hawaii. Like, I'll never forget. It was April 2nd, 1999. All the veterans were on there. I mean, Knobs and Sags were there. Everybody was there. My buddy Landell was there. Tatanka was there. So Sheik and I, we go over. We smoked this hash. Oh, my God. He's like, oh, my friend Vince, trust me. This is from Tehran, Iran. I'll never forget. We go up to our rooms in Hawaii. We smoked this hash oil. Dude, we were so lit. We go to Planet Hollywood. Now, everybody recognizes the Sheik because this guy doesn't leave his hotel room without his freaking, the turban or whatever they wear on.
His get-up.
Oh, my dude. Listen, that guy, I'm sitting to myself, I'm blown as can be in Hawaii at a Planet Hollywood with the Sheik. And everybody keeps asking, like, dude, why didn't you just beat the crap out of Hulk Hogan? Everybody knows you could have. You remember, because the Sheik used to have those big, what do they call those things?
Clubs.
He was so tough, man.
Yeah.
He was so tough. I forget what's the name of those clubs.
Yeah.
He used to challenge anybody to do those clubs. That guy, like you said, bodyguard for the Shaw, he would have beat Hogan's ass.
I was never a fan of Terry Bollea, Mr. Hulk Hogan. I remember when I cornered him at that press conference, the George Foreman, Alex Stewart press conference in Las Vegas, Nevada. He had just been popped on the steroids thing, and of course there was a trial going on, and I went up to him and said, hey, can I talk to you about the steroids? And then some publicist jumped in my face, right? What are you doing asking them questions? And I said to him, bitch, we're at a press conference.
I remember, because he had the same attorney as Foreman, Henry Holmes out of Beverly Hills. Pam Anderson, Hulk Hogan, George Foreman all had the same attorney. I remember that. I do remember that.
Interesting. Real quick, as far as lightweights are concerned, I like Teofimo Lopez, of course. I liked him before he beat Vasyl Lomachenko, but I like his personality and the fact that I think that boxing needs personalities more than it needs anything else. What do you think? How do you weigh in on that?
You want my honest opinion?
Yeah.
I mean, truthfully, I don't watch boxing today. I don't think they're athletes. I think these guys are showmans. I think they want to be everything but athletes. Now, mind you, Pedro, and here's the kind of fighter I like, Pedro, and maybe this will answer your question. You mentioned the Ike Iwabuchi, David Tua.
Uh-huh.
Well, you remember I was there that night. But I was there to see the co-main event. And in the co-main event, you had a gentleman by the name of Maestrito Lopez. And that guy, that is a fighter right there. And that's why I was there. He fought Howard Davis right before that on the co-main event. I don't know if it was Aaron Davis. But it was a great fight. That's the kind of fighter I like. This kid Lopez, I mean, again, I guess for what's out there today, he's the best. Not, I don't know. I've never seen him fight. I know that he was picked to lose against Lomachenko, and I guess he won, and now he's acting like he's cured cancer. But, I mean, hey, great for you, kid. But I would rather look on continually building. Pedro, you know where I come from. Just do it in the ring. Don't tell me you're great. Just shut up and do
it. No, but you know why I love him, Vince? Because he's me. That's me. You know what I'm saying? That's the way I did it. That's the way I did it. I went out. I got in people's face. I imposed my will on people. That's what you have to do. Boxing's all about personalities and imposing your will, whether it's emotionally, physically, or mentally. It's all about imposing that will. I think he imposes his will. I think he's going to be around for a while. And I want to invite you back real soon, of course. You're always a gas to be around, Vince Caruso.
All right. Thank you, Pedro. All the best to you and Ring Talk. Love you guys.
And we got to get lit real soon.
We shall. That's always. And it's legal.
It's legal. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Vince Caruso, of course. I call him my cousin Vinny, boxing promoter. He's done everything but box himself. Straight up, fantastic guy, great personality. Of course, always got a good story to tell. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside look into the world of boxing and MMA.
Said that I have two alternatives, either go to jail or go to the army.
I'm only bold and cocky before and after fight.
Let me see you close your mouth and just keep it closed.
Well, you know that's impossible.
No, no, now keep it closed.
You know that's impossible. I'm the greatest, and I'm knocking out all bones. And if you get too smart, I'll knock you out.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Check it, the soul side of town, the mighty Tower of Power. This came out a couple of years ago. It's hot, it's happening. They got a new young guy on lead singer. Of course, the rest of the band is like me, 105 years old. But Tower of Power still got that sound, man. It's still rock and roll. Of course, I saw them a year ago with the Average White Band. I thought on that given night, AWB won. Of course, it was Battle of the Bands. Anytime Tower of Power and the Average White Band or AWB got together, it was always Battle of the Bands. Emilio admitted that on the air a couple of times here on the show. And the bottom line is, that last time, AWB, of course, had a little bit of an edge. Now, speaking of edge, we've got Mike Tyson going to do battle, of course, with Roy Jones in a 12-round exhibition with 12-ounce gloves, with 12-ounce gloves. I mean, 12-ounce gloves, of course, these guys are going to fight with headgear on, and they're going to score the fight. But yet, if you go to the actual, it's not listed as a boxing match, it's listed as an exhibition. And I got a problem with it. I mean, think about Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson was knocked out in his last two fights. I was there. Washington, D.C., I think it was June 2005. He fought Kevin McBride. I could beat Kevin McBride right now. I mean, Kevin McBride was, Kevin, I'm sorry to say this, but you were a stiff. I mean, that's a compliment. I mean, that's how bad Kevin McBride was. He was the most shocked dude in the entire world when he was standing on that dice afterwards that he had beaten Mike Tyson. Mike just quit. He just couldn't handle it. Of course, the fight before that, in like 2004, Mike Tyson fought a guy by the name of Danny Williams. I was there, I think, and that was fight. He lost to Danny Williams. He got stopped by like in four rounds or four or six rounds. So what I'm trying to tell you is his last two fights have went 10 rounds and not completely 10 rounds, and he's been stopped both times. And yet you're going to buy this fight with him and Roy Jones? What's up with that? I mean, P.T. Barnum said, there's a sucker born every minute. Are you that sucker? I mean, come on, Mike Tyson, he's 52 years old. Yeah, he's put himself into pretty good shape. And, you know, as I look at his body, I say to myself, yeah, 52, sort of looks like maybe he had some Flintstone vitamin help, possibly, or maybe some human growth hormone, possibly. But the bottom line is, he looks good physically. He's pretty lean. I mean, the muscles are trim, and they look hard. They look well-defined, that kind of good stuff. And his gut's flat. And, you know, I mean, more power to him for 52. But on the flip side, we have Roy Jones, a guy that at one point in time maxed out, probably at 168 pounds, not even maybe 175. Well, because at 175, he got lit up a couple of times. So he was unbeaten up to 168 pounds. I mean, he was just untouchable. No doubt about that. 1988 Olympic silver medalist. He got robbed in the Olympics over there in Korea against a Korean. But, you know, I mean, he got robbed, no doubt about that. And, of course, he was going to sign that major contract with Sugar Ray Leonard. I told you about that, where Ray Leonard had the $100,000 in a briefcase. And he was going to offer Roy Jones $1 million as a 1988 signing deal. They were going to do this in Concord, California. Of course, Roy was over there fighting in the 1988 Olympic trials. They started off in Oakland, California, and they moved to Concord, California, to the Concord Pavilion, where I won two titles and went undefeated in four fights. But they moved it to the Concord, Concord Pavilion, and of course, Roy went on to represent the United States in the Olympics. He was considered the best on the team at 156 pounds and lost that decision to that Korean, which was very, very hotly disputed, no doubt about that. I mean, if he fought the Korean again, he should have just stepped on the gas a little bit more and just could have took the Korean out. But Roy sort of had mercy on the guy and went the distance, and they gave it to the other guy, which was absolutely impossible to fathom when you looked at the fight. He really was impossible. So now we have him, like, at an advanced age. And Mike Tyson's 52. Roy Jones is up there as well. And, you know, Roy is a guy that was probably one of the best, maybe still today, one of the best boxing analysts there ever was. He can break down a fight sometimes when his ego is not involved and he's not involved personally. He could break down a fight almost as good as Emmanuel Stewart. Not quite as good as Emmanuel, but pretty damn good, okay? In other words, even though he took the ass whoopings against Lebedev over there across the pond in Europe when he got drilled, of course, the referee let him take that ass whooping like he did. And, wow, Steve Smoger. I mean, Steve Smoger was like eating popcorn and a hot dog. He was a referee. You're supposed to be stopping the fight. He wasn't stopping the fight. He was like, we're just watching it, man. And then Roy got clocked with that last punch by Lebedev. I mean, that was enough to almost kill a guy. Roy Jones is lucky to be alive. He's been knocked out a couple times since then. At the end of the day, Roy Jones has a soft chin. I mean, he's a perfect foil for Mike Tyson's power, isn't he? I mean, all Mike Tyson has to do is just hang around for a while and cover up his chin to make sure he doesn't get drilled. Because, you know, Mike's chin is a little bit suspect as well. You got to realize that. I mean, if he bowed out against both Kevin McBride and Danny Williams, what does that say about his intestinal fortitude? I mean, yeah, that might have been 2004, 2005, but this is a lot long. He's even longer and older, longer in the tooth and even older. His hair is even grayer. His beard's gray now. What happens if he gets tired? Will he quit like a dog like he did before? Will he? I mean, come on. Are you willing to pay $75 to watch this thing as far as an exhibition's concerned? Mike Tyson and Roy Jones? If you are, what can I say? Maybe you're bored. Maybe the pandemic's got you to the point where you have no entertainment. You have no life. You have nothing to do. So you're going to watch the Roy Jones Mike Tyson exhibition. I told you, there's only been one exhibition I've ever been involved with, which was a real exhibition where I didn't try to hurt somebody or try to go out there and impose my will. Not try to hurt somebody, to impose my will. That was against Carlos Sugar De Leon. He was a reigning WBC 190-pound world cruiserweight champion back in 1984. I did an exhibition with him in San Mateo, California. He used to use me for speed. Señor Rápido. That's what he used to call me, Señor Rápido. Of course, that was when Wilfred Benitez got ran out of town. I'm not saying I ran him out of town, but, you know, Zach Hewitt, myself, a couple other guys, he couldn't beat us in the gym. If he couldn't, listen, Benitez would get in the corner. He was here in 1984 to fight for promoter Gordon Ashby in a card that was supposed to take place in March of 1984. But when he showed up at the gym, he stood in the corner and he didn't come out of the corner. I mean, he took like two steps to the right and then he said, come get me. And you did come get him. And first round, you know, I'm a little leery of Benitez, hoping he's going to sneak some magic punch in on me. He never threw the magic punch. I mean, he might have thrown 9 punches in the 4 rounds in which we sparred, 2 of which I was scared, 2 of which I wasn't. But at the end of the day, Benitez was shot. He didn't do his thing. And De Leon and I did the exhibition along with, like, other guys did it with him as well. Of course, that was the night I retired Butch Gomez. That was another story. That was my trainer's brother. He said, go out there and light him up in an exhibition. I said, you got to be kidding me. That's your brother, bro. He goes, go make him. He's retired. Make him stay retired. I did. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Next up, blonde, beautiful, brilliant boxing promoter, model, undefeated boxer, super mom, Jennifer Childers. Next up on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Baby, love the way you turn me on.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Back in the 90s, people were asking this question, who's that lady? The lady was Jennifer Childs. She was undefeated as a professional boxer. She gave it up after 7 fights. Bottom line is, she has blessed us with her presence here today. Jen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Petey. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Oh, man, Petey, you're really showing my age here. I'm fine, Princess. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing well, thanks.
That's good. Now, you know, let's talk about your life to an extent. I mean, you're a mom now, a super mom now. Of course, that's most important and most prevalent. But the modeling, how did you get into boxing?
Oh, well, I was extremely heavy. I had played Division I basketball. I had a scholarship at Murray State. And after that, I put on a lot of weight. And I was working in the newspaper and advertising sales. And this friend of mine said I should try this boxing workout with her. So I went across the street to the C.K. Newsom Community Center and got a great workout. I loved it. I was hooked. And then a trainer talked me into getting into the Golden Gloves about a year and a half later. And so I fought the Indiana Golden Gloves and won that. Had some pro fights, but it was a new sport, you know, for women back then, back in the day. And did that for a while, and then I got into promoting later on. You know, after I started having babies.
You know, the promoting with Golden Gloves, Golden Gloves champion, that's pretty cool. I want some Golden Glove titles. But making fights, as far as I was a matchmaker out here. I was actually the promoter. I was a front guy, and the lady had the money and that kind of good stuff. We did a few cards back in the 90s here in San Francisco. And I tried to put together fights, and I wouldn't put together fights with even though I knew my hometown guy was selling tickets and this stuff, I couldn't, by conscience, put together a 70-30 fight. I couldn't do it. You know what I'm saying? I could barely put together a 60-40 fight. What I mean is, I wouldn't put my guy in so easy that he would blow the guy out. And that's sort of like a tough road to walk in between there.
Right. I did the same thing. I mean, I tried to evenly match guys, you know, for a good fight. And we never had any serious injuries. And I was a promoter who never really liked big knockouts. So I was thankful all our guys were safe and well paid, and girls too.
Speaking of girls, Clarissa Shields is considered the best women's boxer in the world right now. Right now, I recommend her for insomnia, for crack addiction, for methamphetamine addiction. Listen, if you suffer from any of the previous mentioned maladies here, what I suggest is you watch Clarissa Shields on YouTube, and I guarantee you will fall asleep, because just mentioning her name puts me to sleep. No, I mean, she's not exciting. She's not. And she's the best in women's boxing. Women's boxing is hurting right now.
Yeah, there's not too many big stars, but same with the men's.
Katie Taylor can fight a little bit, can't she?
Yeah, and Clarissa Shields, she was on, what was that show, The Gladiator, or one of those shows. Her conditioning was terrible. She couldn't keep up with the other lady. Did you see that?
No, but listen, there's nothing impresses me about her. I mean, she's just, yikes. I mean, I saw some internet posts the other day where she was being heralded as the greatest female fighter of all time. You know, if I had any stomach, any breakfast in my stomach, I would have thrown it up right then and there, because I just don't think so. But here's my question. Okay. If women's MMA is hot, I mean, when you watch women's MMA, they knock people out. They get it done. Like, yikes. I mean, it's pretty vicious. There's no doubt about it. But it's entertaining. In other words, people want to watch that. People don't want to watch women's boxing where women fighters, female fighters, have these big fat pillows on their hand, Jen, and they're punching each other, and there's really not getting any leverage on it, because let's be honest, a 147-pound woman is not going to have the same strength and leverage on her punches that a 147-pound man is, naturally, normally, and therefore, she shouldn't have to use the same glove. In other words, in the NBA, the ball is smaller, the bats are smaller in baseball. You see my point?
I see your point, but if they make the right fights, I mean, look at that. Remember when Christy Martin was on the undercard of that Tyson fight, and she fought Deirdre Dougherty, that Irish girl? It was blood all over. It was really exciting, and they stole the show. That was an awesome fight, and everybody was talking about it. And then she's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. That happened, and they're just not making the right fights, I think. But
No.
You know more than I do.
Yeah, I think Christy Martin didn't want to fight Lucia Riker. Could you blame her?
No. Blame her. She's tough. I met Lucia a couple times out in L.A. Yeah, she's a tough chick.
She only lost to a dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, think about that.
What's wrong with her now?
I don't know. I never got Emmanuel Stewart. You know, her and Emmanuel Stewart were tight romantically. Did you know that?
Yeah, I had heard that.
Yeah. So her and Emmanuel never spilled the beans. Of all the things he told me, and they told me stuff like, baby, I could never repeat. And that's one thing about me is that you will never see a tell-all book from me telling people things about my friends. I'm just not going to do it. I mean, I've got approached. I'm broke. Okay. I'm telling you, I'm broke. I mean, and somebody approached me with a decent offer about a year and a half ago. If I wanted to do a tell-all book, and I mean, they wanted me to do me tell-all book. In other words, you know, some of my friends and people I still talk to, I wouldn't do it. I would have to sell them all out. I'd have been all alone with 20 grand. Big deal.
It's not all bad stories, though. You've got good stories you can tell. Scott Romer, the photographer here in the Midwest, he's into boxing and wrestling. He wrote a book. There's some great boxing stories in there.
Okay. You know, Christy Martin was good for women's boxing. Mia St. John was pretty good for women's boxing. As Layla Ali was okay for women's boxing. She had the name, didn't have much talent. Jacqueline Frazier could lick a stab. Joe Frazier's stepdaughter or daughter couldn't lick a stab if you wet her tongue. She was bad. I mean, here's what's up. One time we're together in Oakland, California, Joe, myself, and the daughter's telling me she wants to fight, and she's sitting there like pounding down these burgers, these cheeseburgers we got, okay? And she's pounding on these burgers, and she's got this big old belly around her, and big old gut around her waist. I'm saying to myself, she looks like a mother that was about to give birth, let alone a woman trying to fight. So then 2 years later, she's in the ring with Layla Ali, and you know what happened there. Not much. But back to women's boxing. If you put smaller gloves on women's boxing boxers, wouldn't they be faster, and wouldn't they be more exciting to watch?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
You know, I mean, because...
Unless they're heavyweights.
Well, I don't know. Heavyweights, were you a heavyweight at one point in time?
No, I fought at middleweight, and then...
No, I meant as a basketball player. After basketball.
Oh, after basketball, yeah. I would have been in there with Tyson Fury. I was like...
Okay. What's the toughest part of your life now? I mean, is it being a mom? I mean, your kids are starting to grow up now, but is it being a mom?
Some days it's difficult. We got this new baby puppy, and she's made my life a little more difficult. She's like having a newborn. She's up all night, pooping and peeing all the time. I don't have any struggles. Life's pretty good, you know? I got good kids. I'm blessed. I'm gracious. Life is good.
Okay. Tell me about Mike Pence. He was your governor for a while, wasn't he?
Well, in Indiana. I'm in Kentucky now. I've lived here for about 7 years.
Where at in Kentucky?
Close to Fort Knox, you know, the military base. Cool. About 30 minutes south of Louisville.
Cool. So, yeah. What brought about the move? Did you get married or something like that? You got a man? What's going on?
Yeah, I got married, and he was a Marine for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's a ninja, and he used to teach the captain's career course at Fort Knox. So that's how I ended up here.
So is there any chance you ever promoting boxing again?
Yeah, perhaps. You know, they've got a new facility here, and I was considering doing a show there, and then the COVID happened, and, you know, now everything's just slow as molasses in January. Not much going on.
If the vaccine comes in hand, the vaccine gets rocking and rolling, I've got an event, a dance planned for June or July of 2021. I contacted, I've worked with this arena before, but I contacted the arena last week and they said, you really want to send my book an event? Yeah, I'm going to book an event. I'm not putting my money out there, thousands of dollars, but I've put a few hundred bucks up to rent this arena to see if things are good at that point in time. I'll be ready to go with a sort of like a 1970s throwback dance.
Nice. Oh, I love some of your 70s music you play on the show.
We did one last year. We did one earlier this year, and we sold it out like in 4 days. And you know what? Here's what Don King told me, because you know Don King's always been my – he's been an advisor. He's always been sort of like a – he's been an advisor, and for good and for bad. So anyway, I tell him, Don, I want to throw this dance. He goes, yeah. He goes, throw it in a small place. I said, man, I said, you know, I said, I can't make a whole lot of money in a small place. He goes, throw it in a, listen to me, throw it in a small place. I said, why? He goes, because it'll make it look big.
Well, I need to talk to my lawyer on that one.
Exactly. I got to talk to my lawyer. So anyway, he gets me to go to the place, go into the small arena. So I sell the place out. I sold like 380 tickets out in like 4 or 5 days within a week, right? So I call him up. I go, Godfather, I sold out 3 or 4 days. And he says to me, you dumb MF, you should have got the bigger arena.
That sounds like Don King.
Good old Don King. So do you miss the big time? I mean, you know, you were around all the big fights and this and that for a while. Do you miss that?
Oh, some days I do. Some days I do. It's nice I can go on YouTube and watch the old fights, and it's fun listening to your show again, getting to hear all the boxing celebrities. And
well, you know,
it's nice to go back in time.
To think that I started the show when I was 7 years old, and 37 years later, I'm only 44, and I'm
right.
And I'm still rocking.
You sound young,
but you know,
you
no,
still
no.
Sound like you used to.
Listen, I'll never forget how I learned how to do radio. My mother, who was my running coach as a fighter, okay, after I got tired and lost the fight, she goes, you're not going to embarrass me or your family ever again. Getting tired in a fight, she made sure. Anyway, but she you know, some people have mothers that are very influential. I was. I mean, she was just on top. She was on, when I was growing up, she was on top of things in the boxing career. She sort of kept me level. You know what I'm saying? So you're a great mom. I had a great mom. Everybody should have a great mom, because there's, you can't replace moms, man. You can't. I mean, I got an aunt. My aunt was my second mom, but you just can't replace your mom. Once she's gone, she's gone.
Oh, thank you. It's the most important work I've ever done. And, you know, as far as boxing, I keep my WBA belt on my dryer in the laundry room to keep me humble.
Well.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
But your mother was, I saw pictures of your mother and your father. She was beautiful, stunning lady.
Well, I thank you. She was pure Norwegian, so you can imagine all the crap she had to go through in 1957 having a near black baby.
Oh, bless her heart.
You know, she went through a lot. I mean, she went through a lot of stuff, man. I mean, I remember a couple of times in public where she got called out, and she basically, I remember one time we used to go to the doctor, and they would look out the window, and they wouldn't call Mrs. Fernandez because she was like bleach white.
Aww.
Yeah.
That's
so
sad.
She learned how to deal with it. She taught me more about racism than anybody on this planet. So at the end of the day, I mean, she left me well knowledge, no doubt about that. Anyway, with that, I will say, I miss you. It's good to hear from you. I hope you come back sometime real soon. The bottom line is you're a class act. You're a great mom. And can't say much more than that, princess.
I miss you, too. Thank you, Petey. I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Okay. All the best, folks. The incomparable, the one, the only, Jennifer Childers on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
And you're higher than a kite.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Hit East Bay Soul, baby. Greg Adams and crew, check them out, eastbaysoul.com. They got it going on November 22nd, 1963. A coup took place here in the United States when the powers that be took out the president of the United States, and they decided they would hide the investigation away for 75 years. In other words, the secrets of the Warren Commission that they, what they put together as far as Lee Harvey Oswald allegedly killing the president, we won't know for another 25 or 30 years. Bottom line is, We know who did it because they did it. At the end of the day, November 22nd is also famous in the world of boxing. November 22nd, 1987, I was at the Hilton Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada. I remember watching Red Fox, a comedian, go in with cocaine all over his nose and on his shirt. Me and my buddy Lenny were there. And, of course, I had hawked my tickets to the fight because I thought that, you know, you'd be able to get some tickets at the fight. But I sold these tickets in advance for a lot of money. I had a couple of tickets, and I sold them for big money, like three or four times what they were worth, thinking I can get one at the fight, right? So we got to the Las Vegas Hilton. We never actually got tickets until the fight was about to start. So the fight was about to start. We got our tickets. We're walking in, and Mike Tyson knocked him out in two rounds. Trevor Burbick for the WBC heavyweight title. Of course, that was at the Las Vegas Hilton Hotel. Everybody was there. Bill Caton was there, of course. That was Tyson's manager. Jim Jacobs was still alive at that point in time. And, of course, I think he was. And, of course, Don King was in control. No doubt about that. Once Don King got control of Mike Tyson, people think that Mike Tyson sort of, like, went downhill. I don't think so. There's ups and downs with Don King. He made a lot of money with Don King. Probably couldn't have made more money with anybody else, but he made a lot of money with Don King. And on the flip side, Don King made a lot of money as well. Anyway, November 22nd, 1987, 1986, Mike Tyson becomes heavyweight champion of the world, of course. And 1963, we lost John Kennedy. At the end of the day, I get a little mushy when talking about JFK. But you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Don't forget, DAZN's got boxing, ESPN Plus got boxing, and of course, pay-per-view on November 28th, Mike Tyson and Roy Jones if you're a sucker. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. At the end of the day, you could be doing a million things. You listen to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, so I thank you from the bottom of my heart. I want to thank Larry Merchant, Vince Caruso, and, of course, Supermom, Jennifer Charles. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.